Good morning. We have had a 9 o'clock argument, and we have guests in the courtroom, senior class of government students from Bethesda Christian School are going to listen to the arguments. And they've just had a tour of the court offices, chambers, as we call them, by Chief Justice Livingston. And I think I said earlier that this is one of the oldest courts in the country, created in 1891. I do want to say we have not been here since 1891. There have been numerous former chief justices whose pictures are hanging around the courtroom and former justices whose pictures are outside in the hall along the west side. And it's kind of interesting today. I would just like to point out that we do have a former chief justice of this court who is going to argue today. He retired, Justice John Casey, and is now back in private practice, and so we treat him like we would any other lawyer. And so just to make sure everybody understands that. But it's kind of interesting. So I wanted to point that out. And I think that with that introduction, we will begin the argument if the lawyers are ready. And
good morning. May it please the court. I know I speak for both of us when I say we're delighted to have an audience, so welcome, students. My name is Heidi Block. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Allegiance Hillview. Allegiance is the surface owner of some property in Denton. The minerals, however, are owned by an outfit called Razor, who's not a party to the suit. Allegiance, my client, and Razor entered into a surface use agreement. I'll refer to that as the SUA. And that agreement gave Razor the limited time in which to drill gas wells on the property. And if it didn't drill within that limited time, it would lose its rights to drill forever. In February of 2008, Range, the appellee, entered into a mineral lease with Razor. And so by doing that, Range stepped into the shoes of Razor under the SUA. Now, the SUA was amended in July of 2008 to extend what's referred to in the agreement as the development deadline. That's the drilling deadline. And that's the deadline by which the dirt had to be started to, you know, be dug out. The drilling actually had to be commenced initially by August of 2008, and in the amendment in July of 2008, that development deadline or the drilling deadline was extended to July of 2009. So Range then had the obligation under the SUA as amended to commence drilling by July of 2009, or both Range and Razor would forever lose their rights to drill. Now, the development deadline could only be extended by a legitimate event of force majeure. And that's the issue in the case. Did an event of force majeure occur which extended that development deadline? Because it's undisputed that Range did not commence drilling by that July 11th date. Now, Range contends, and the trial court found, that there were two events of force majeure. First, there was the City of Denton's failure to issue permits despite timely application by Range. And second, this litigation, and we challenge both of those. I'm going to focus this morning primarily on the timeliness of Range's permit application, because that's really the key issue in this case. And when the parties entered into the SUA and put that requirement in there, they were clearly agreeing, contractually agreeing, that Range couldn't procrastinate. Range couldn't dilly-dally, sit on its rights, wait until the last minute to file for its permit applications, and then try to blame it on the city for not issuing the permits in time. Now, whether or not Range timely filed its permit applications requires us to look at two things. First, what were the steps that were necessary for Range to take and the city to take in order to get those permits? And second, when did those things occur? Any oil and gas developer that's faced with a looming deadline, an absolute drop-dead date, by which they must commence drilling or they forever lose their rights. Any oil and gas developer faced with that deadline reasonably works backwards to make sure that all of the preliminary sequential steps that have to be done in order to get ready to drill, all of those steps have to be completed in a timely manner to make sure that they can commence drilling by that deadline. Now, working backwards from the drilling deadline or the development deadline of July 11th of 09, of course, you'd have to get your equipment on the ground and mobilize on the ground to start drilling. But before that, you'd have to get approval for a gas well permit. Before that, you'd have to get approval for a gas well plat. And before that, in this situation, you had to get a special use permit, or what I'll refer to as an SUP. And that SUP, or special use permit, was required in this case because the drill sites, the property at issue, and in particular the drill site, or it was reduced down to one drill site, so the drill site was so close to residential areas and shopping facilities, people walking about. It was so close that the city required that a special use permit be approved. And that process allows public participation. It allows the people whose backyards back up to the drill sites to come in and say, wait a minute, I don't want this in my backyard. So you've got real due process concerns, notice to the public concerns. Now, before the SUP was issued, of course, you had to do other things. You had to get the surveyors to prepare the plats for the city and the Railroad Commission. And in this case, because of the proximity to homeowners, Range had to get waivers from certain homeowners within a certain bubble distance around the drill site to give their permission to waive the spacing requirements because it was so close to people's backyards. And Range knew all this. They were very, very well-versed not only in this kind of urban development, gas well development, but in particular with the city of Denton's requirements. They had been down this road before. They knew all of the hoops that they would have to jump through. They knew all the steps that they would have to take. And they knew it was a lengthy process. In February of 08, when they entered into the mineral lease with Razor, they had 8 months before they had to commence drilling. And they thought that was plenty of time. And then with the amendment in July of 08, that gave them another 12 months from to July of 09. And, of course, that was enough time. Now, in April of 08, not 09, but in April of 08, very soon after entering into the mineral lease with Razor, Range's regulatory person, who's responsible for filing the permits, her name was Mary Patton, she met with the city to talk about these very issues. How long is the permitting process going to take? And she came away from that meeting in early of 2008 with the understanding that it would take at least 3 months from application date to approval by the city council. So she knew at least 3 months from application date to city council approval for the SUP. And she also knew, they knew all along, that the SUP was going to be required for this property. The testimony of Charles Russell, who's the planning supervisor for the city, I think is very instructive, and that's in Volume 3 of the reporter's record at pages 65 through 73. He describes the typical process after the application is filed. Now, all applications for an SUP, of course, have to be vetted by various departments of the city, the engineering department, the fire marshal. Lots of departments get to look at this, again, because of public safety concerns. And they always come back with comments, issues that need to be resolved. Mr. Russell had never seen one that didn't have issues that needed to be resolved. Sometimes, at least one round of comments and issues that need to be resolved, and often two and three times. So once all of those issues are resolved, and that takes some time, then the application is scheduled for a hearing before the Planning and Zoning Committee, or the P&Z Committee. And that doesn't just happen all the time. The Planning and Zoning Committee meets only once every couple of weeks. And there has to be 10 days prior notice of that meeting. Once it gets to P&Z, the planning and zoning, they can table it, review it again later, or they can approve it or deny it. Once the P&Z recommends approval, then and only then is the application scheduled for a hearing before the City Council. And the City Council also meets only one or two times every month. It's not every day. And it also requires notice. In the City Council's case, it's 15 days prior public notice. And again, the City Council, once the application comes before it for the first time, they can table it for review at a later date, particularly if there are a number of citizens that come to the City Council meeting to voice their concerns. Or they can deny it or approve it at that time. So you can see why this process takes a long time, at least 3 months, and very often much longer than that. But by the time the application is filed until you get final City Council approval. In January of 2009, the beginning of that year, the City Council published its schedule of all the City Council meetings for that year. And I've handed out a set of demonstrative aids. Does the court have those?
Yes, please.
Okay. If you look on the very first page, I've got, I'm sorry, it's about page six of that. It's the one that, it's a chart, and it says DX Defendant's Exhibit 56 at the bottom. It's got a little sticker that says Defendant's Exhibit 56. That's the City Council meeting schedule. And as you can see, there are lots of City Council meetings. They're the ones that are called work/regular session. Lots of City Council meetings in February, March, April. There's one in May. There's one in early June. And as you get closer to that development deadline of July 11th, if you flip over to the next page, you can see there are no City Council meetings between June 16th and July 21st. And, of course, July 21st is after the July 11th development deadline, so that would certainly be too late. So June 16th is the very last possible City Council meeting to get approval for the SUP in time with any hope that Range would meet its obligation to drill by July 11th. And even that's cutting it pretty close, because even once you get the SUP approved, there's still other steps. You need to get the gas well plat approved. You need to get your equipment out there and start drilling. Now, again, Range knew all along that it would take at least 3 months from application to City Council approval. So with the last possible City Council approval date of June 16th, 3 months prior to that, of course, is March 16th. Range didn't file in March. They waited another precious month until April 16th in order to file their application for the SUP. This put the City of Denton in the unprecedented position of having to approve, to vet, review, resolve comments, go through planning and zoning, go through City Council, all of that within an unprecedented two-month short time frame. Charles Russell testified that that would have been the fastest he had ever seen an application get approved. On the very first page of the demonstrative aids that I've handed out, I've got two timelines. One is the ideal timeline, the shortest possible timeline that Range put the city in the position of having to do. And, of course, we know that didn't happen. But that first one, the shortest possible timeline, I want to go through it. April 16th filing date. May 12th is the last possible day for the review committee to complete its review in order for the application to be considered at the May 20th planning and zoning meeting. Now, that May 20th planning and zoning meeting is critical because that, as you can see in the next item, is the last possible P&Z meeting with sufficient time to be noticed and heard at the June 16th City Council meeting. Now, this, again, is the perfect world if there are no glitches. If one thing gets off track, everything else gets delayed. And that one thing got off track. The one thing that got off track occurred at the very second step. The review committee did not complete its review by May 12th because of errors and flaws in Range's application. Not anything the city did. It was errors and flaws in Range's application that required resolution. That's why The review committee didn't complete its review by May 12th. That's why it didn't get to the May 20th planning and zoning meeting with sufficient time to be heard at the June 12th meeting. Now, you're going to hear from Range that, and I've included this June 3rd planning and zoning meeting, and it's crossed out because that would have been too late. If it had been heard at June 3rd planning and zoning meeting, it would not have been in time to have it heard then at the June 16th City Council meeting, because the City Council meeting requires 15 days notice. There's not 15 days between June 3rd and June 16th. Yes, that's typical, that's standard.
It's typical standard, but not ordinance,
but the city's policy. It's certainly required to have the planning and zoning review before the city council meets. Now, they're going to argue that the notices could have been stacked up, that there could have been a double notice of the June 3rd planning and zoning meeting and the June 16th city council meeting. Now, that's an after-the-fact argument that they have now come in saying, well, it could have happened. And they got Mr. Russell on the stand to acknowledge in the realm of, you know, anything's possible, that certainly it could have been possible to have double-noticed the meetings. But he clearly testified that's not city policy, it's not how it's done, they didn't do it that way, and more significantly, Range never asked that it be double-noticed. So that's a non-issue. That's a non-issue. In the ordinary course of things, the notice would have had to have been sent out with 15 days after planning and zoning review, and the June 3rd meeting would not have gotten them there. Now, if you look at the actual timeline, I go through here what actually happened, and you can see, I've already run out of time, and I've got a lot more to talk about, but let me run into my 5 minutes just a little bit. And let me point out, we submit to you as a matter of law, Range's permit application cannot have been timely when it waited until such a late date that it put the city in the position of having to approve this application in an unprecedented two-month timeline. And that's particularly true since Range knew all along that it would take at least 3 months. Yes.
Do you concede that it's correct that whenever there's not a specific definition of the word timely in the either the first SUV agreement or in the amended, that it encompasses in the definition of law that we are to look at the timeliness of what happened in view of the right of the circumstances that existed when you're measuring that timely activity?
In the context of this agreement, I don't think that's correct, but let me jump ahead and say, even if you accept that it's a reasonable time, they still didn't meet it. Again, reasonable would have been, they knew going into this what their deadline was, and they knew the steps they would have to take in order to meet that deadline.
Well, you were talking about a reasonable law. I mean, a reasonable law company wants to go back in and look at a time frame, starting back from the date of July 11th and count backwards, and then we're talking about curative work. You didn't mention that you need to go and get first a unit approval at the Railroad Commission, and then in addition to that, you want to look and see who owns the land, perhaps get oil and gas leases from.
Absolutely.
And that involves title work.
Absolutely.
And that involves surveys, mm-hmm. And all those are what I understand from looking at the record were going on in February and March of 2009 before mm-hmm. those were completed in time for filing of an application in April.
If you look at the record, it was really 08. There was a flurry of activity when they first got involved in the project in early of 08. They got their surveyors on board. They got them going on the surveys. They were ready to go. Then everything sort of took a back seat because they got the extension. There was really nothing happening then. The only thing that was happening throughout the end of 08, the rest of 08, is they were trying to get these homeowner waivers. They got two homeowner waivers that would have allowed five wells early on in the process. They claim they were waiting for that third waiver to allow them to drill a sixth well, but they knew by August of 08 that they would not get that third waiver.
Are you disputing that Alliance Mineral property was leased to Range and in which there was additional issues to be resolved during the time frame that was in the February and March of 09 time frame?
No, the lease with Allegiance was resolved in December of 08. They had that lease by 08. Now, their own representative testified that the leases didn't affect the permitting process. But even if you assume it did, they had that lease by December of 08.
Thank you for answering my question.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. Let me, if I have any time left, I'm going to leave it for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, and students. Of course, the fundamental issue in this appeal is whether Allegiance has demonstrated or can demonstrate that there's legally insufficient evidence, or in other words, no evidence, to support the trial court's judgment and its 67 detailed findings and 21 conclusions. In its attempt to create an illusion that there's no evidence, Allegiance first argues the evidence through an improper, after-the-fact, hindsight lens, ignores the duties that Range owed to its lessors, and all the work that was required to be done to get Range to the point of being able to file meaningful permits, and three, misconstrues and improperly applies Texas law. Allegiance has signaled its improper hindsight analysis today by talking about Range should have reasonably began working backwards. In its briefing, it talks about working backwards from the June 16 City Council date, looking backward from the drilling deadline, and so forth and so on. But that sort of hindsight approach is nothing more than Monday morning quarterbacking, and it leads to arbitrary and absurd results. For example, in the trial court, Allegiance's counsel argued to the trial judge, Judge Shipman, that Range would have had to have filed its permits in January in order to be timely. Now they apparently concede, well, perhaps if you had filed those by mid-March, maybe you could have been timely. But that sort of arbitrary flip-flopping is what looking at things in hindsight results in or leads to. Instead, Texas law requires, as Justice Myers pointed out, and in fact this court in the Churco case that we cite, that when a specific time is not fixed for an event such as here filing the or submitting the permit applications under the force majeure provision, it simply has to be done timely. There's no specific deadline for that. This court says that means that it depends on the circumstances in each case, including the nature and character of the thing to be done and the difficulties surrounding its accomplishment. And the difficulty of performance may be a circumstance to perform the time. So when we look at Texas law, appropriately, we see that we've got to look at what was Range doing and why was it doing it. And the reason that Range is involved in these activities is because it owes duties to its lessors. Here we have a lease, and again, as Justice Myers pointed out, I mean, we have to go get title opinions. We have to get curative documents. We need to try to fully develop the minerals, which means that in this modern-day age of drilling laterals, we can drill all the wells we need from this one drill site down here in the southeast corner of the lease, but we've got to run those laterals up. We've got to go beyond University Drive. We've got to get leases from the state of Texas. We've got inset areas, as shown in tab 4 of our appendix, where we need to get additional leases to be able to extend our laterals even further north to develop those minerals. We need to get off setback waivers from homeowners to try to allow us to drill a sixth well over on the east side of the property. And when we look at all of that, all of those are duties that Range owes to those lessors to fully develop, fully maximize the production, and to be able to try to pay those royalty owners the maximum amount of royalty. And we have a duty to exercise that and to do that. And that's exactly what Range did in this case. It exhausted the efforts to try to be able to fully develop the minerals, and by doing that, it took it up to the point in time where it filed or submitted these permit applications. And that's the appropriate way to view what Range did. not from some hindsight analysis here.
By approaching it that way, don't you just virtually negate the existence of the drilling deadline? I mean, it's meaningless.
No, Your Honor, I don't think so. And the reason is that Range balanced both the duties that it owed to its lessors to accomplish all these events, like the trial court found in these unchallenged findings, 28 through 30, where it said you have to do all this, and you have to do it in order to get to the point where you can file your permit applications. And so what they're really arguing is that, well, Range could have done something differently, maybe, but doing something differently doesn't equate with Range acted unreasonably under the circumstances. You know, the coach could have called a different play on third and three, but that doesn't mean the play he actually called was unreasonable under the circumstances of that case. And in this context, what they're arguing is that, well, you should have filed your paper sooner than you did, even though it would have been a futile act, because you still needed to accomplish these events, as the trial court found, in order to be able to meaningfully process these applications. And the law doesn't require us to do a futile act. We filed them fully with three. We were at the city, and I want to talk about that a little bit. We were at the city on April the 3rd with our permit applications, and we're told, look, the zoning shows that you don't need an SUP. So we submitted the gas well permit application, and then we're subsequently told you are going to need an SUP, so... then we had to come back and we filed the SUP application. But the reality of it is we were there in time to get before the city council on June 16th. And had the city not improperly noticed, sent out the public notice and put the wrong zoning in their public notice, which is what they also told us early on, we would have been in a position to be in front of the city council on June 16th. No, Your Honor. I know it's what they're saying, and we've addressed that on page 10 of the Range's brief in footnote 9. What the issue is there, they're saying that we had errors in our applications. That's just not true. Allegiance had approached Range and said, look, when you submit your applications, we want there to be, instead of one entrance off of Bonnie Bray and one off of Panhandle, so the traffic could flow that way, that might interfere with our surface development at some point in the future. So what we'd like you to do is to have two curb cuts off of Bonnie Bray. We said, we're fine with that. We talked to the city about it. They had given no negative feedback about it. We submitted it that way. But by the May 12th date, the city had not responded to that. And that's what caused it to get delayed. We were actually trying to accommodate Allegiance. And they're trying to whipsaw us into saying, well, you made an error. We didn't make any error. We were doing what they asked us to do, and we've explained that in the brief there at footnote 9 on page 10 of the brief. But the arguments that they make also are contrary to Texas law, in addition to the fact that the hindsight analysis is not appropriate, and the fact that it leads to arbitrary results, which is a violation of contract construction rules. They also argue that, in effect, this should be construed, the force majeure provision should be construed to create a forfeiture. And that's contrary to Texas law. Force majeure provisions should be construed to avoid forfeiture provisions. And in this case, that's clearly, when you apply the word timely under all the circumstances, it does operate to extend the deadline here. The way they argue the force majeure provision, it simply attempts to read it out of the contract. For example, in their argument, they say, well, in the context of the force majeure clause, it's clear that timely meant with sufficient lead time to allow the city to act on Range's permit in time for Range to commence drilling by the development deadline. Well, if we could crystal ball and see what the city was always going to do so that we could file so far in advance, you wouldn't need a force majeure provision. In this context, though, we did fulfill our obligations, get the permits ready to file in a timely manner, while keeping in mind the deadline, and we balanced that extraordinarily well under the circumstances of this case in dealing with third parties that weren't always willing to be cooperative.
So let me ask a question, sort of esoteric, but the hindsight argument to me sounds like an argument that imports the concept of foreseeability into the term timely, to make reasonable, essentially an argument of negligence.
I think, Your Honor, that the test is simply looking at what happened and was it reasonable under the circumstances. That's the test. The foreseeability argument that Allegiance raises is simply the other side of the hindsight coin. What they're really arguing is that we should have engaged in a futile act, in effect, by filing this paper before the permits could have been effectively processed. You know, if had we gone in January and filed paper with the city, would that have been timely? Well, when you've still got all this work that the court found in unchallenged findings had to be done before they were ready to be processed, and the law doesn't require a party to engage in a futile act. And that's essentially what they're arguing here, is that we should have filed paper and engaged in a futile act when there were things that we had to do and that we did do to fulfill our duties to our lessors. I would like to try to address a few of the things on this timeline as well before I am required to sit down. I think on the shortest possible timeline argument on the May 12th issue, I've addressed that where they say that it was due to errors in Range's application. That's just not correct. The May 20th entry, last P&Z meeting was sufficient time to be noticed and heard. That's not correct either. The June 3rd P&Z meeting was available. No additional notice was required to be sent out for that meeting. And in fact, Range was scheduled to be at the June 3rd P&Z meeting when the notice of May 26th, when the city discovered on May 26th that it hadn't sent out this public notice with the wrong zoning in it. And that's what threw everything off. You know, the idea that on their June 3rd entry where they say, would not have been in time because of subsequent 15-day notice requirement. That is misleading. The city doesn't require you to have to send out notice after the P&Z meeting. The city was willing to work with us, had committed to work with Range to get this through the process and get it heard on June 16th, and it would have or could have easily sent out the notice either before the P&Z meeting or insufficient time to have the June 16th City Council meeting.
So if the June 3rd meeting had not been postponed with Planning and Zoning Commission, you're saying you could have gotten in front of the time?
That's correct, Your Honor. But for the May 26th, the city found on May 26th that it had sent out the incorrect notice, and then they had to go back and re-notice the P&Z meeting and the city council meeting, and that threw the P&Z meeting then off from June 3rd all the way to June 17th, which missed the June 16th city council meeting. Again, under the proper standard of review, when the evidence is viewed in the proper context and Texas law and the rules of construction are properly applied, it's clear here that ample evidence, and certainly more than a scintilla of evidence, supports the findings and the judgment of the trial court, and Ranger respectfully requests that this judgment be in all things affirmed. Thank you.
If you think you're through, Mr. Sims, I want to ask you an interesting question to me.
All right, sir.
Looking at your map, that's part of four. It looks to me like the drill site's off the property that's covered by the SUV.
Your Honor, and that is a great point. It's simply when this got processed on the picture, that little red square should be moved over just on the inside of that blue line.
Okay.
If you see all those sort of all the little dotted lines where the wells were projected to come out of there, that's where.
That. So it should be moved over further to the west.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's just a.
Thank you, sir.
Technology error. Thank you.
Okay, I appreciate that. Well, let me address one of your questions first, Judge Gardner. On the foreseeability, it's not really a foreseeability concept. I mean, this isn't a negligence issue at all. It's more of just a common sense concept of what do you need to do to get things done. All the things, the many things, as Judge Meyer pointed out, that Range knew they had to get done, a long list of things they knew they had to get done. Well, first of all, they did foresee it. They'd done this before. They were well versed in the process. If I've got a brief due on a certain date, I don't start writing it the day before. I don't start reading the record the week before. If I've got a brief due, I back it out. I know it's going to take me a long time to read the record. It's going to take me a long time to research. It's going to take me a long time to write. So I plan accordingly, and working towards that deadline. That's all I mean when I'm talking about planning ahead, and that's what any reasonable oil and gas developer would do. I see a question.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I have a question. So all of the things that they, with hindsight and or with foresight, they mm-hmm. needed to know what they had to do, does that all go to the question of timeliness or reasonableness? And if so,
well, it is a question of fact, and that's a good point because they say we're flip-flopping. We first say they should have filed in January, and then we suggest they could have filed in March. There's not an absolute cutoff date when we know they should have filed by. They could have filed by December of 2008, certainly, when they had that last lease, and they had all the waivers that were necessary for the five wells. They could have filed in January of 2009. They could have filed in February of 2009. March of 2009 would have been cutting it pretty close. That would have been a fact issue. I suggest to you, though, that April of 2009, as a matter of law, is too late because it put the city in the position of having to approve it in 2 months, and that was unheard of. So at the very least, the evidence is factually insufficient to support a finding that 2 month prior application date was timely. But we submit that as a matter of law, it was not timely. They made a conscious business decision. They were waiting on this waiver that they knew they couldn't get by August of 2008. They waited. They weren't even sure they wanted to go forward with this project. They made a conscious business decision to wait, and they waited too long. And that's why we're here. We asked, yes?
To you, approach the request that you've made for us to act in the way that you seek a reversal. In the way that there's this a review of court findings of fact and conclusions of law, on the idea when you used the phrase a moment ago, insufficient evidence. You're not talking insufficient, aren't you trying to prove to us that there was no evidence?
We've asked for both remedies. We've asked for a reverse and render because we believe there's no evidence. In the alternative, we've asked for reversal and remand because we believe there's factually, at the very least, there's factually insufficient evidence. But our first position is that there's that as a matter of law, they were untimely because they waited to give the city that 2 month window.
Position that in looking at findings by the trial court that we're not to gauge those with the precedence of considering them just like a jury finding?
Absolutely, you do.
And that we're to look for only no evidence questions in order to overturn decisions that have been made by the trial court on the findings of fact and conclusion. conclusion of law.
Yes, again, we've got no evidence and insufficient evidence. The burden was on them to prove the force majeure. And you look at these, yes, you look at these trial court findings of fact, just as you would a jury finding. And you look, yes. Thank you.
May I express that I'm really disappointed that Judge Casey didn't do any argument. I thought you guys were asking him.
Well, it's just...